I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. This is another new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Thanks so much to everybody out there for listening. It is that time of year. It is award season, and what the Academy does before they get to 5 nominees for the Best Animated Short Film is they take all the submissions and they bring them down to the coveted 10. And on that short list of 10 is a terrific animated short called Late Afternoon. Joining me now is the director, Luis Bagnell. Luis, happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well.
Thank you. So congratulations on being on the Oscar shortlist. How does it feel?
Oh, it's kind of mind-blowing, to be honest. It's certainly a long way from what you're thinking about when you're making a short film. So yeah, it's fantastic.
How long ago did you first think about Late Afternoon?
Well, for me, it was an idea that went back quite a long time before I even started making it. So I probably had the idea for it. It could be 2012, maybe 2013. I had the very initial kind of idea. And so I let it kind of develop quite slowly in my sketchbooks by drawing the character and just thinking things out. And then I decided I would kind of coalesced into more of a solid idea, and I decided then I would pitch for funding in Ireland. And so I asked the Cartoon Saloon if they would support my application, and then I went in and I pitched it to the Irish Film Board, and to RTE, and then we took it from there.
Yeah, Cartoon Saloon is getting really popular with the animated features of Song of the Sea. You worked on that. You were Annie-nominated for your character design on The Breadwinner. I have to say, The Breadwinner was my favorite animated movie of last year. I love that film so much, so deep. Congratulations on working on that film.
Yeah, that was a fantastic experience. It's been brilliant to work here because I feel like every project is a different challenge. Breadwinner obviously brought its own set of challenges, but it was really exciting project to be part of. And it was very honored to be able to go over to the Annies and everything for that earlier this year as well.
How would you say you've grown in your time at Cartoon Saloon, working on these movies and now your own short film?
I think now, working here for a little while, I've been working here for about 5 years now, and I think that's helped me to basically grow the confidence to be able to tell stories that are a bit more personal, maybe, and to kind of be able to express myself a little bit more boldly when I come to the projects that I want to make. So I think it's kind of a confidence-building thing, you know, because I've seen Tom making a film, I've seen Nora making films, and both of them have their own points of view and their own ways of doing things. And it just kind of reminds you that, like, you know, everybody will have a different approach or a different story to tell, and that's all valid, you know. Excuse me. So that's been brilliant to kind of see that happening close up, and it definitely gave me a lot of confidence going into my own project.
And I can tell in watching Late Afternoon, I watched it a couple times now, and I could tell how personal it felt. It is a very relatable story. It's about an older woman who looks back on her life. I have to tell you, Louise, the ending, the twist in this short is so good, and I really want to ask you about it, but I don't want to spoil it for everybody out there, but it caught me by such surprise and made it such a heartwarming, even more emotional experience watching this. In all the film festivals that you've been at with this short recently, have people come up to you and told you personal stories that have related to what happens in Late Afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been one of the, I suppose in a way I was a bit surprised by it, because I didn't expect people to be so forward with their personal, you know, with their personal lives, to be who's a complete stranger. But certainly when I've been at festivals and been at screenings, it's almost like every single time almost somebody will come up to me afterwards and they'll want to tell me about their own experience dealing with a relative who you know, had dementia, or you know, looking after a parent, or, you know, there's just, you realize, like, it's affected so many people's lives, and it's something that's sort of under the surface. It's such a private thing normally, you know, between family members. So that's been kind of amazing, because you realize that people are really grateful to be able to have a feeling that's expressed, like, you know, the expression in the film kind of reflects their own experiences. So that's been really amazing. to be honest. That's like winning a prize in and of itself. I think the thing is that, like, when I'm making it, I didn't know where it would fall. I didn't know if it would be accessible to everybody. And I feel like even if you haven't experienced this kind of thing personally, I think you kind of understand what it would be like. You know, it's kind of trying to give people a little bit of insight into the kind of, you know, emotional roller coaster, I guess, that it might bring you.
Yeah. The main character's name is Emily. Was there an Emily in your life who, you said you've had this idea for several years, was there an Emily in your life who directly inspired your thoughts to make this?
There wasn't an Emily, but my grandmother was called Elizabeth. One of my grandmothers was called Elizabeth, and definitely her life inspired it a bit because, for instance, it's not particularly obvious, but she grew up in the film. It's actually set in Dublin, so I have in my mind there's a particular, you know, it's a particular setting and a particular time frame that is kind of taking inspiration a bit from my own grandmother. Towards the end of her life, she didn't have dementia, but she definitely had, difficulties at the end being able to connect with what was going on around her. And I was kind of too young at the time to really grasp the difficulties myself. And it's not until I'm older now, and of course now she's gone, that I can't have that conversation with her and ask her about things, or to ask her what, you know, what's going on with her in her mind, or what, you know, what can she remember about growing up. So it's like a little bit, like, I feel like I kind of lost an opportunity there. So I guess it's also trying to explore that as well.
And there's a really powerful line that Emily says in the short. She brings up time. How are you when it comes to time management?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a challenge, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, for me, time management is, I think I always am a bit overambitious with what I can do in the amount of time I have. I think that's something that a lot of people who work in animation have the same sort of instinct to try and pack in as much as they can. For me, like, a lot of the challenges I have with time is, like, I have a lot of ideas, or, you know, when we were making the film, there was a lot of amazing ideas that we came up with, and you have to try and fit them all into this. You know, I didn't want to make the film any longer than about 10 minutes. And partly because, like, you know, it's going, you know, the budget gets bigger, but also because I really wanted it to be succinct and to keep this sort of momentum going throughout the film. So time management definitely came into that, just in terms of, like, really being quite, you know, having to be a bit like, you know, oh, okay, that's an amazing idea, but we're going to have to cut it out because it just doesn't fit in with this moment and we don't have enough time to explore it. So we have to be very careful with that in the film, and certainly for my own personal work, I definitely have to. I have to be a bit strict with myself in order to get anything done.
And I think you're ambitious when it comes to the fact that you cast yourself to voice one of the younger versions of Emily in the film. Was that an instant decision? Was that in the back of your mind the whole time, or how did that come about?
No, it definitely wasn't. It was definitely not my first choice. I wouldn't call myself an actor. It was partly out of necessity. So as I said, that the character in my mind is actually from Dublin. The Emily character is from Dublin. So I wanted to have a character that has a fairly neutral Irish accent. Mm. And Fionnuala Flanagan, who voices the older Emily, she's an amazing actress, and she's from Dublin, so she was able to hit that perfectly. But then after that, we didn't have a lot of money left to get we didn't have basically a lot of options for professional actors. So we were like, you know, seeing if any family or any friends wanted to try out the voices. And obviously for most people, it's quite daunting to suddenly be trying to record somebody's voice. You know, you change your voice when you realize you're being recorded. So after a few tries with a few different friends, I just ended up doing the scratch audio. In the meantime, I did the scratch version of Emily just so that we could keep moving on the film, with the idea that we would re-record it when we found the right person. And then it ended up being that we didn't really find a better version. So I just recorded it more, like, you know, with the proper audio quality. We recorded it later up at the studio up in Dublin and in Gorilla Post. So it worked out okay in the end, but I'm definitely not going to be looking for any acting jobs going forward.
Hey, I think you did fine. You didn't need anybody else for that role. It's your short. It's your role. Go ahead right with it. Man, I love the vision of the colors, how Emily transports back into the memories of her life. What was the thought process behind the exact colors? It's a little bit different every time, but how she transports back into her past.
Yeah, so that was a really key element of the film that we played around with a bit to try and make sure that it was right. The whole kind of, the meaning behind it for me, I mean, obviously the colors are kind of representing memories, but for me, I was basically trying to visualize the kind of abstract concept of somebody's inner world. So this woman's inner world, so her inner life, if you will. And it's quite a tricky thing to try and get on screen, and that sensation of being able to, you know, like, you know, a memory suddenly comes into your mind and you're swept away by it. So the color, you know, at the beginning, for example, the color red, a very vivid red, would allow the character to move. Once that appears, it allowed a kind of a visual narrative to, a visual thread into the memory that followed. So it was kind of a way of leading the audience into this world that she's in, and in back into these memories. So we ended up using the colors quite specifically. Generally speaking, we were just trying to associate different colors with different times in her life. So the red ends up being mostly her childhood. This kind of purple color is kind of like her kind of like teenage age. And then there's a few more different colors that come in, like maybe blues and greens that come in later. That's probably more her adult life. And also kind of reflects the idea that, like, when she's a kid, it's like bright and energetic. And then, like, you know, things don't go as simple or as easy towards, you know, like, things get complicated when you grow up. So I think we also wanted to use, like, the biggest, brightest color at the beginning, and then it would get a little bit more complicated later on.
I just love the thought process behind it. I'm fascinated. I love the fact that, you know, so many people think, oh, people just make decisions quickly about what to do with even these animated shorts. There's a thought process behind every single shot, and what you're describing is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's just like with this film in particular, well, certainly for me anyway, with this film, we really wanted, it was a very sensitive subject, and we were trying to tell quite an emotional story, I suppose. So it was all very, we had to kind of quite carefully craft it so that, you know, it's kind of like you're hiding the seams a little bit as well, so that you feel the flow of the memory and you get sucked along in this kind of experience rather than it being too jarring. Because the jarring moments, there's a couple of more jarring moments in there, but they're kept, you know, they're there on purpose for effect. So it's kind of a blend of a lot of different choices you make along the way, build up to make these things work.
So you have been shown at 73 festivals to date. That is just incredible. And you won at Tribeca, which is just amazing. So we're in this awards frame of mind. We're almost to the Oscar nominations and all that, but how are you going to be spending the holidays? Is it going to be a little bit of a break for you before the awards build up again?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm going to be spending time with my family up in Dublin and with my partner's family. So I'm not, the only good thing, well, for me, the main thing is that I'm not going to fly in any planes anywhere. I'm not going to go away that far because I feel like I've been traveling a lot this year. It's almost nice to have the break of just staying in, staying with family and catching up with everybody. So I think be trying to chill out before I kind of everything kicks back in next year.
There you go. Well, I wish you the best of luck with the Academy Award nominations and everything and all the success with Late Afternoon. Congratulations, Louise, on this short. It's really good.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
For more information on Late Afternoon, go to the brand new website, lateafternoonfilm.com, and see if Late Afternoon is up for an Academy Award when Oscar nominations morning will be Tuesday, January 22nd. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Happy holidays to everybody out there, and we'll see you in the new year.